The OTV Sports app. Listen, watch, read, all in one place. Wherever you are, we're always with you. The OTV Sports app. Available to download now from your app store. The OTB Podcast Network. This is OTB Sports Radio. Alan Quinlan's How's the Head?
Hi all, Alan Quinlan here. Thanks a million for joining me again for my third episode of my chats with people to see how they're getting on during this pandemic. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by the lead singer of the Coronas, Danny O'Reilly.
Quinny, how are you, man?
I'm very good. I'm not, I have to admit, I'm not an obsessive music mogul or enthusiast. I love all kinds of music, but I certainly like the Coronas as well. Yeah. So I'm really interested in just, I'm really interested in having a chat with you, really intrigued really by how people are getting on during the what's been an unprecedented time for everybody. And I think you, so many people enjoy your music and would be interested in having seeing what our conversation would be like. I already spoke to John Kerwin and Pat Short, and just to get their views on how they're getting on. So what's life like been like for you? You were on tour before all this happened.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm lucky in a way. I came down to Dingle just after St. Paddy's Day, and I thought I was going to come down here for a long weekend, and I've been here for the last 12 weeks now in lockdown here. But like, as I was just saying to you before we went on air, there could be worse places. This is my current view here. So
wow.
It's pretty impressive. And there's loads of space, and Dingle is lovely. Like, this is our family home down here that, you know, we've been coming to for years. So it's sort of our second home, and it's amazing. I've got the piano here, I can do a bit of work. But yeah, I mean, it's a strange time, you know. As you say, we were meant to be on tour now. I think we were meant to have a big show this weekend in Cork. It would have been one of our big shows of the year. In the meantime, the last couple of months, we would have toured America, the UK, and then we were looking at going to Australia next month. And so everything got postponed, obviously. And then there's obviously the other unfortunate band name issue that I've had to deal with. But I don't know. Listen, to be honest, like, I think we're luckier than a lot. You know, we have a good following. We have a good 10 years of doing this music thing under our belt. And, you know, I think whenever it turns around, I'd like to think that we'll still have a following there. But it's very tough for a lot of new bands. But as I say to all my mates who are in bands, at least you're not sharing a name with the virus. But apart from that, you know, I mean, as I say, I'm trying to remind myself. Initially, I found it really difficult to try and write. The first reaction everyone has when this happened was to say to me, "Asher, you'll be grand. You can just go off and write the next album. Like, you know, you don't need to. You can just change your schedule and go and write your next album. You'll be grand. Lock yourself away." But you can't force that stuff. And like, I didn't know what to write about for a start, and I didn't. You know, everything was so up in the air. It was just a weird time. So what I did for the first couple of weeks being down here was, I don't know, like, self-promotion felt a bit weird. Like, we were meant to be releasing singles a couple of months ago, and it's just like, it didn't feel right. There was so much uncertainty, and obviously it was such a serious thing. The whole pandemic was crazy. So I started doing other band songs every night on the Corona social media, and just promoting other Irish bands that I loved. Like, and I thought it would only go on for a week, but of course lockdown got extended. So I ended up doing about 30 covers of other Irish acts.
And what's the reaction been to that?
It was amazing. It was amazing. And it was funny because I did it for myself. I didn't do it like, wait, they hear what I can do of other band songs. I did it for my own mental health. Like, I wanted to have something every day that was like, you know, an outlet, some sort of creative outlet, but like, was, gave me a schedule, gave me something to work on during the day, something to think about, a song to learn, put the camera up. And it was just like iPhone recordings. It's nothing fancy, like, you know. But it was great for me. I did it for myself, as I say, but it was cool to actually see then after a while, people started reacting to it and going, you know what, I'm looking forward to these songs every day. I'm locked away in a house in the middle of nowhere, and you know, I like the band, and every night I'm really excited about what other Irish band you're going to do, and I'm following them every night. And as I say, I did it for myself, but it was cool to see that reaction from different people. And then eventually, after a few weeks of it, I was like, you know what, I feel like now maybe I can do a bit of writing. So only in the last couple of weeks now, I've sort of set up a little you know, dodgy studio in one of the rooms there, and I'm trying to record it and write a little bit for Corona stuff. So, yeah, man, like, I'm happy out down here. As I say, Dingle is lovely and quiet. You know, there's not much cases down here and stuff, and I know a lot of the locals here, and it's a lovely vibe. So I'm blessed really to be down here. So, but yeah, I'm keeping busy. I'm missing sport, man. I'm missing sport so much, like, yeah, more than anything. Like, you know, playing a little bit. I'm still playing a bit of junior football back in Dublin, like, but just missing watching sport. Like, it's sort of like the schedule. I'm sure
the lift it can give people, I think, at the weekend. I just want to ask you about, you mentioned there that you're playing other people's music for a couple of weeks and you're back writing a little bit now. What comes to my head when I think of that is being an artist an obsession? Because I think a sport, when you're a professional athlete and you're trying to succeed, it engulfs you. You wake up in the morning, you think about it. It's very hard to switch off. So is it kind of like that for you, that this is part of your DNA, that every day is music, music, music? I know you say you play sport as well, yeah, and we all need to switch off, but is it an obsession with you?
I think
aside from a really brilliant job.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's an obsession. I think it's just ingrained in me that I think we always had a good work ethic. Like, when this happened, we were like, okay, how are we going to adapt? How are we going to change it? And it's a weird thing as well, because there's an awful lot of, there's almost like a competitiveness of people's productivity as well. And that's not really, you know, a lot of people can be looking at other people, oh God, they're doing this every night and that band is doing this. And, you know, and it's not really about that for me. I think people need to do whatever they is best for them to get through it, you know. Yeah, and for me, just, you know, delving into music and doing something every night was the best way for me to deal with it, as I say, because I think it's so ingrained in me and it's on my mind all the time about what the band is going to do, and that's, you know, at the forefront of my mind. And so I think that was just my way of doing it. But I would hate if people are looking at me doing songs every night and certain, like, oh God, he's being productive, I should be doing something. And I think there's a lot of people out there who would go, all right, this lockdown is starting now, I'm going to learn a new language or read a book every day. And like, and then if they don't, they start to get in on themselves a little bit. And I think it's important people don't do that either. You know,
it's kind of like the homeschooling for kids. With my little fella, the principal sent out the email at the start saying, look, do what's best for you and don't overstress it and stuff like that. Is that kind of your demeanor, that you're relaxed and calm type of person? I know the reason I talk a lot about mental health is because I'm a very anxious person. So it always intrigues me, how does someone like Danny O'Reilly cope with the ups and downs of life, the stresses, the pressures that maybe we all feel at some stage?
Yeah, well, I think I've definitely had moments like that where over the years where I've had lows. I mean, I've definitely been anxious as well. I think in the last few years, I've sort of gotten on top of it a little bit more. I've just become a bit more self-aware. I know myself when I'm starting to feel a little bit down, and I've got a good little group of supports of people I can talk to and mates and, you know, whoever it is, family and you know, people who know me well and who I can just, you know, even sometimes when I'm not sure what is bothering me, and just, yeah, if you have that one mate that you can just sort of have a chat with and just go, yeah, and just chat, and then you start to figure out what is on your mind. But definitely in the first week of lockdown, I had a moment of sort of quarantine blues, like, where I was like, God, like, what is going to happen? Will gigs ever come back? You know, how is this pandemic going to affect our band? You know, what's going to happen? What about our album? Are we going to, you know, I don't know, all sorts of thoughts. You know yourself, that's the thing about anxiety, is it can sort of consume you, and there's all sorts of weird thoughts that you maybe don't even believe on a day-to-day basis, but for this one moment, it sort of gets in on you, you know. And so, I think I've definitely had ups and downs, but I think I've just gotten a bit more sort of self-aware, and I'm sort of just acknowledging, okay, well, I feel a bit crap today, and that's okay as well. And trying not to even hide it or like bury it down or anything, you know, just ringing someone and just going, geez, I feel really weird today. I just don't feel worried about this and that. And, you know, whoever it is that you can talk to, you know. So I think that's the difference for me. As I said, when I got to, what happened with us was we moved to London and signed a big record deal with Island Records in probably about, it was with the Long Way album. So it was probably about 2016, I think. And so we moved over to London and we signed a big deal, and then it didn't go well. Didn't happen. Island dropped us and we moved back to Ireland. And I was like, oh, this is, you know, what am I going to do now? This is the end. And I sort of got a bit of writer's block for the first time as well, which I never really had before. And it wasn't so much writer's block, but I was writing stuff, but I just kept telling myself it was crap. Like, I'm sure you had it in sports as well, when your form is getting away from you or whatever, and you think you're not, you know, you're not firing at all cylinders. And
did you have to try and figure that out yourself, or did you speak to anyone? Obviously, you come from a family embedded in music, and your mom was just an incredible, incredible artist. Did you speak to her? Did you speak to other people, other bands? Because rejection is something that we all struggle with a little bit. You know, 100%. Even if you're the kid in the schoolyard where you don't get picked in the team when there's a game of soccer going on in the yard, which we all, nobody likes rejection. So essentially you're rejected here. How do 100%. You dust yourself down, and what did you do?
And that's the funny thing, because we went in with our eyes open. We weren't like a naive young band going, this is it, this is our big break, and it's all going to happen. Like, we went in knowing the stats of how many bands don't make it, and, you know, you need a bit of luck on your side and all the different things with Ireland. So we were aware that it wasn't a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination, and, you know, we were half expecting it. We said, we'll roll the dice and see what happens. And but still, when it didn't happen, it still got to me, and I didn't even realize it as much as the start. But definitely, I mean, I'm lucky that I have people in the industry, as you say, like even my dad as well, was always my mum's manager and was involved in her record label. So he understands the business as well. My sister's in the industry as well. So I had them to talk to about it, and a lot of friends. And it definitely hit me when I came back. But I think it was actually, we had a gig after we moved back from London. We played Electric Picnic a few years ago. And this was when I was feeling, and sometimes you need, it's probably, again, the same as sport. You get a big performance and it sort of snaps you out of it. You know, a big game and you play well. And you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm back.
It kind of reinforces the confidence and strength and belief in you, doesn't it?
100%, 100%. And I heard Paul O'Connell talk about this recently as well in the podcast. It was just one of those games where the ball always came to you. You know, you just happened to be in the right place, and he was man of the match in whatever game he was talking about. But it's like when we played Electric Picnic, came back, and we had a really good slot. It was a beautiful evening. We were on at like 7 p.m. on the Friday. And like, it was packed, like, you know, thousands of people. And then I remember just thinking to myself after, how could I even consider doing anything else? Like, this, I am so lucky. This is the best job ever. And sometimes you need a little reminder like that. And I think that was a turning point to get me out of the little bit of a low after moving back from London, like, you know. But as well, sport for me has always been a big thing for my mental health. And even now, like, I was never really much of a jogger. Like, I always loved team sports, and I'd rather chase a ball. I run all day, even if it's a five-a-side, you know, and I'm not much of a soccer player, but I'll run all day chasing the ball. But like, you try and make me run the hills here, and it's just like, but I've gotten into it a bit more, you know. I find it a little bit more, I suppose, a bit of a sort of meditation vibe, I suppose, when I'm going for some jogs or whatever. But definitely miss playing as well. But yeah, the weekends, I find the schedule of not having games a week, like, I realize that if it's a Saturday, you're like, who's on the Premiership or who's on, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that's all gone. So it's like,
that's,
it's just,
as well,
it weirdly feels like time sort of stops, like, you know. And even when you're talking to your mates, you've nothing to talk about them, because it's like, United aren't playing, and Ireland haven't got a rugby match anytime soon. I don't know, stuff like that I miss more than anything, really.
Do you think, because we were talking about the rejection piece there, coming back from London with your tail between your legs, if you like. I certainly experienced that a lot in my rugby career, where I was dropped off teams or didn't get picked on a certain squad. And I think now at this stage of my life, you think those experiences are quite good for you, in a sense that you do, if you try and learn from them and share those experiences with people, It certainly makes a difference. And I always think, well, what should the likes of me as a retired sports person, if I'm chatting to kids, say? And you kind of say, learn from your mistakes and try. And sometimes we need to trip over and fall over to make us stronger and stuff like that. But it can be difficult at times for people. And I just think it's really interesting the way that you went with an open mind, that you were kind of like going into the job interview and you may get the job or you may not. And that's probably an important part of being an artist, isn't it? Will people buy your album? Will people like your songs? Those kind of ups and downs that are probably important. We don't enjoy them.
Yeah.
They're important.
Well, that's it. And I think as well, when I moved to London, I almost got too sort of swept up in the whole business side of the industry. And, you know, do I need to be in certain places? And do I need to, you know, the sort of behind the scenes sort of making relationships with radio people and getting a bit sort of caught up in, and that wasn't really the reason that I got into this. You know, it ended up becoming more of a reason to be anxious, worrying about all these uncontrollables. Like, again, you know, that's something that you can probably relate to as well. If you start worrying about things that are out of your control, it's not useful for anyone anyway. So
I know, but we know that, Danny.
Yeah.
Deep in our minds, we know, well, that's out of my control. I shouldn't worry about it. But it's quite difficult to stop it, isn't it? So I kind of think you got to share that experience, don't you?
100%.
Like with your mates or other band people. And I certainly think, you know, we kind of look to see if we can surround ourselves with mentors or people who've had experiences. That's really good for me, I think.
100%. And talking about it and coming through it. And as you say, like, I definitely think if this pandemic had happened, you know, even 5 years ago, I think I'd be more anxious and more worried and more worried about the possible negative outcomes and the negative effect it might have on the coronavirus and all that sort of stuff. But I think just life has brought me to this point where I'm a bit more like, ah, you know, whatever happens will be grand. Sure, might off the ball might give me an L gig now and again.
But I always think of the caveman scenario. You know, if you were back as a caveman thousands and millions of years ago, all you wanted was some food every day. You know, maybe we want too much in life now. Maybe we want too many materialistic things, too much kind of non-important stuff is there that we crave and we want, you know, we're greedy, I think, as a society.
100%. And I think that's actually one thing about this pandemic is because it's such a leveler, you know, and everyone is in the same boat, all of a sudden, a lot of things that might have been really important to you in like what you thought made you happy in your career, like some sort of success, like, you know, now all of a sudden, it's like everything's back to zero and you're like, well, is that really important to me? Is that, when you take it all away, like the way it's been taken away now, you can sort of weigh up what's really important to you. And you go, well, you know what? I just want to be able to be with my family, do this and be able to do something that, you know, creatively, whatever, or whatever just fulfills you. And it could be a much smaller thing and it might not be a big competitive thing. I need to be the biggest. I need to be this, and if I get that, I'll be happy. And that was the thing that I had for a long time, is whereas if this just happens, then, you know, I'll be happy. And, you know, the goalposts keep changing. I remember when the band started, all we said was we wanted to play at Oxygen or whatever the festival was. If we could play at Oxygen, I'd be happy out. And then, of course, that happens and your goalposts change and you're like, you know, now it would be great to headline. But, like, if you're always, it's good to be working towards something and have ambition, without a doubt. But if you're putting your happiness on that, if that just happened, then I'd be grand. Like, and then it happens and you're like, yeah, but, you know, I need that now, actually. And you need to be able to, I know it's a cliche now at this stage, but you do need to be able to, you know, be present and sort of enjoy the journey of getting there. It's good to have the ambitions, but you also need to be able to go, you know, I'm happy enough day to day and I'm going for that, but, you know, it's getting there. We'll see what happens. It's all a bit of crack and sort of not being too hard on yourself, like, you know. And that's, as I say, that's something that I've seen happen to me, thankfully, in the last few years. You know, I've been more self-aware at stuff like that, you know.
You've had incredible success. We mentioned the ups and downs along the way that everyone has, but, you know, 5 studio albums so far. There's another one coming out. What's the adrenaline rush for Danny O'Reilly when you're performing there, when you nail it, when the crowd are going wild, when you're selling the music, and you're kind of up on that pedestal. What's that kind of adrenaline rush like? Do you let yourself go, or do you just kind of stop in silence in a sense and have that bit of pride about what you've achieved? Because yeah. I always think for me, again, earlier in my career, you know, I got excited. Incredible match, and the next week you lose and it's a disaster, and I've given away 3 penalties and cost the team. So I wish what I know now I knew back then, because yeah. it's just about having that leveler. But it is lovely, isn't it, to play yeah. in front of 80,000 people or whatever for me, and that's what I miss the most. You can still do that, so you I can know. Still kind of, there's a bit of a craving in me, where's my adrenaline rush gone, if in a sense, if you know
100%.
What I mean.
And I'd say that is very, very tough, as you say, when you get to the stage. You know, I mean, I'm 35 now, and I can feel my body, like, the 5Ks are getting tougher, like, put it that way, like, you know.
Yeah.
But thankfully, yeah, like, we can still perform, because for me, you said at the start, the buzz of performing is everything to me, and that's why this pandemic is a bit worrying. Like, we're firing ahead and releasing albums. I'm writing new music. We're promoting it as best we can, you know, whatever way we're adapting to how we can promote the album. But it's the live gigging that I miss. Like, that's the buzz. Like, you know, that's yeah. that's what it's all about for me. Like, I'm not one of these people who are like, you know, every album that we write and create is a piece of art. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm proud of the albums. I love playing live so much, and they you know, they go hand in hand, you know. So without a doubt, now that the live gigs has been taken from us, it's like an awareness that is the biggest thing for me, you know, playing live, having that adrenaline rush, and in answer to your question, yeah, it is just it's my favorite thing. I absolutely love playing live. And I don't even tend to drink before a gig or anything like that, because it just clouds the buzz for me. Like, I want to remember it. And again, only in the last few years, I've gotten a bit more comfortable on stage, where during the gigs, I'm reminding myself to go, okay, listen, this is great. Like, take this in, take this moment in. And I'm saying this to myself while I'm on stage, in between songs or whatever, I'm going, right, this is amazing. Like, remember this, you know. And I'm trying.
It is amazing, because I want to do what you're doing. We all think we're musicians. We sing in the shower. I sing when I run. I'm visualizing myself singing on stage, but unfortunately, I can't do it. If I could sing, I'd probably. I can't even sing in a group of people. I'm embarrassed. But that is incredible. You realize that people think that's amazing. I think that's amazing to stand up there and just pump out music and play music is just phenomenal.
100%. And I am blessed. But I would say, though, the grass is always greener on the other side. Like, I talk, because yeah. you know, I live with Kev Mack.
Yeah.
And he's my housemate. He's minding the house in Dublin. But like, I say to him, I'd swap it for an All-Ireland with Dublin. Like, and he's like, no, you wouldn't. Like, because he loves his music. Like, you know, he's like, no, you wouldn't. Yeah. I'm like, I would. But I probably, if I was playing for Dublin, I'd probably be, as you say, you know, I'd be like, oh, that would be great just to be a musician. And I suppose the other thing about the sport is, as you say, you might give away a few penalties the next game and the crowd are booing you. Whereas even if I go out and have a bad gig, they're on our side. Like, they've paid to come see us. They'll sing the songs for me if I forget the words. Like, you know what I mean? So it is a bit of an easier gig for me.
The critics are not at the gig, really, essentially. Yeah. They're probably ones that listen afterwards or write and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly,
What about your relationship with the Irish rugby team and Joe Schmidt? I was listening to you telling the story about... you know, playing for the Irish team, going, meeting them, going to Japan, sending them a text message. Tell us about that.
The drunken text. Oh, it was brilliant.
Did you enjoy Japan?
I loved it. And you know what? We were there for the Scotland game. So the buzz
was
amazing.
That was incredible, that first one, wasn't it?
Oh, amazing. And amazing performance, and just like, you know.
It went downhill after that, unfortunately.
I know, just as I left, thank God. But yeah, no, I was only there for 6 days, but it was amazing. We had been to Tokyo once before as a band way back. We our first album got released over there, and we did a small little tour over there. So, but I hadn't been there in years, and it was just amazing. Amazing vibe. Like, I love going away to see Ireland. I was the same. I was at the Soccer Euros a few years ago in Paris as well. And like, that was amazing crack as well. Like, and just those trips are just unbelievable. Like, you know, but Joe is so lovely. Like, yeah. And even still, he still sent me a text recently, you know, asking, or I think it was after the Late Late I was on or something. He sent me, he's just a thoughtful man, like, you know, and he was great. But now Faz is my mate now as well. So we went in after the Wales game, and he couldn't get him off the stage. He was singing every Oasis song, like, go play this one, Danny. It was great. We were having such crack. Like, but anyway, the text from Joe was, so he invited me down on the Friday for the captain's run. The captain's run was actually on the Friday, and the game was on the Sunday, whatever way it worked with the ground being free. And it was great. Me and my mate went down so he was so good. And I know a couple of the lads from over the years, and it was cool. It was just so good to be there. But anyway, after the game, great performance. And I was like, will I text Joe? And I was like, no, I won't text him. And you know, you're having this sort of thing. No, he's probably, his phone is hopping. I won't text him saying thanks for Friday or whatever. I'll leave and I'll text him during the week or whatever. And then it gets to 3 a.m. and I woke up the next morning and I just had this fear of, oh my God, I texted him last night. Like, and I looked at the message, and I for some reason I thought it was a brilliant idea to send him just a really smart phrase, Oscuelga. He'll get a kick out of this. Like, so I sent him two smart Latin Hebra, which is a good start to half the battle, right? That was all. That was all I sent. And so I was just like, oh God. And fair play to him, he replied the next day as well. And he obviously just threw it straight
into Oscuelga.
Yeah, well, he threw it into Google Translate, I'd say. I'd say he was like, what the hell is this? Because he was like, yeah, thanks, Danny. The first half was pretty good, all right. But yeah, we're happy with the win. Like, I thought I was talking about the actual match, the first half of the match, like, you know. But oh, it was so funny, like, you know. But he's an absolute hero. And the lads are great. You know, they made me feel welcome. As I say, we had a session after the Wales game in the Six Nations. And they just wanted to have a bit of music. They're the same as yourself. They didn't want to go out into town in Dublin and have a mad session. They just wanted to be with their partners and have one or two beers and have a bit of music. So I just brought down a good few talented friends of mine that I could hide behind, and we had a bit of a session, a bit of a trad session, and everyone was singing and all. And it was really, really nice. They're very down to earth bunch of lads, and you know, I'd say it's a weird time for them as well, knowing when it's going to come back. I see there's change in some of the rugby laws today about time in the scrums and this sort of stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see when.
It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like to have such a big effect on the game. And then you're like with the crowds and behind closed doors. And, you know, I'd say it's a really tough time to be, you know, a sports person, because you're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, you know, and
they got a lot of criticism after the World Cup, Danny. What did you make of that? You're probably on the outside, and I'm embedded in rugby, and some of it frustrated me. Mm. I haven't been afraid to kind of criticize bad performances before, but I just think as a nation, we're very, very quick to kind of stick the boot in, aren't we? Maybe some people don't like rugby, and I get that. There's this impression out there and perception that all rugby players are from private paid schools and that they're, you know, elitists and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'm sitting here at Limerick Junction in Tipperary and on the farm, and I certainly didn't go to a rugby playing school. So it does frustrate me a little bit. Yeah. And I genuinely have nothing against anyone who's gone to a rugby playing school. I genuinely believe that, of course, guys who went to rugby playing schools probably have a better... They certainly have a jump on people coming from club rugby, because, you know, there's really good rugby programs in schools. But I just found after the World Cup that there was a fair movement. It was a minority, I think, who were kind of happy that the Irish rugby team failed. And I know a lot of the boys, and I don't think they're elitist. I think, of course, you'd always get one or two here and there who maybe think they're better than themselves in all sports. But I just thought the criticism was sad, particularly on Joe, because of what he'd achieved with Leinster and Ireland. And
100%.
There's no doubt that Joe is ruthless and he's a tough taskmaster. But I think what he achieved with Ireland was it tainted it a little bit, and I was disappointed with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the other thing about it, it's a bit like that in all sports. I think Irish people especially, that there is that tendency to be that begrudgery thing. Like, I mean, the Dublin senior football team are getting it now. They're winning. Like, and I think because Ireland had such a good year the year before, beating the All Blacks and getting to number one in the world, and, you know, maybe that just teed them up a little bit. So that when it didn't go well in the World Cup, there was a few people ready to jump in with their oar and have a little go at whatever has been on their mind for a while. But I mean, I just think, yeah, we probably just peaked a year too early and we committed to a game plan. Maybe we're afraid or.
Yeah, but it's not just the rugby either. The soccer team got battered as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so look, it's an Irish thing that we celebrate when there's success, and then the first chance we get, we stick the boot in, which frustrates me a little bit.
This is OTB Sports Radio. Alan Quinlan's How's the Head?
Danny, I just want to throw to your song. You released a new song last week with Gabrielle Aplin. Yeah. It's called Lost in the Thick of It. Let's have a listen to the song.
Cool.
That was brilliant. Well done. Tell me a little bit about the song and the new album.
Yeah, well, the song was a real sort of organic thing, the way it came together. Gabrielle's a friend of ours, and I called over to her and her fiance. Her fiance is Alfie Hudson Taylor from a great Irish band called Hudson Taylor. And I called over to their house in Brighton last summer, and we just chilled out for the weekend. I brought the guitar, but we weren't, you know, we we weren't, I don't know, I suppose the clock wasn't ticking for us to be seriously writing. We were just sort of having a bit of crack, and, you know, it just came together very quickly. And, we asked Gabrielle to sing on the song, and thankfully she said yes, because she's a very successful artist in her own right, in the UK and all over the world as well. So it was great to have her on board. And yeah, song's getting a great reaction. It's sort of, ironically, it's sort of about, like, I think, yearning isolation, which is, but the lyrics seem to be, I think that's the thing about music as well. Like, every song can take on a different meaning depending on what's going on in your life. And people are texting me about
all. Is that what it's about? Is it about characters, places you've been, things you've experienced? Or I just love to know, when you sit down, when you say to write, like, is it a blank sheet of paper and you're literally, or is it something playing in your head that you can just get out pretty quickly? How do you create a song?
It's different. Like, it's funny. Okay, say for example, at the moment I've been working on a few songs here, and, you know, initially I sat down and I was like, oh, I don't really want to write about being in isolation and you know, the weirdness that's going on, but it's hard to write about anything else. I've always been a very honest songwriter. Like, the lyrics that connect most with most people are the ones where I'm being really genuinely honest and putting most of myself on there. They're the ones that connect mostly with people. So, yeah, I mean, it can be different. A lot of the times I'll start with a few chords, work around a little bit, and then maybe some melodies will come, and sometimes the lyrics sort of write themselves, or sometimes I'll have some lyrics written down. And, you know, it's different. Every song is different. They come together in different ways, and sometimes they come together really quickly, like Think of It in Brighton with Alfie and Gabrielle, where it was just really natural and organic, and we wrote it in a few hours, really. And, you know, the very initial demo that I've recorded on my iPhone, you know, the arrangement hasn't changed much to what it ended up being on the album. Obviously, I brought it back to the rest of the Coronas, and everyone worked on their parts, and we just, you know, we tightened it up and made it. But we knew there was a little bit of magic in the initial demo, and I think oftentimes it's important to not get in the way of a song, like, you know, without getting too deep into being creative. But sometimes I just, like, oh, there's something in that little melody, I just need to not wreck it, like, you know, let it be out there and sort of not put too much of myself in it. Try and let the song be the thing, and just sort of, I don't know, I suppose you're some sort of vessel for it to go through. But I don't know, I'm enjoying it writing at the moment, and you know, we're very proud of the album, looking forward to getting it out at the end of July.
When you're writing, are you playing a few tunes and leaving down the guitar and writing a few lines? Is that the way it works?
Yeah,
because you can't, or do you write the whole thing and then play it? And
yeah, it can be different. Again, most of the time I will start off with trying to get a few chords, a bit of a vibe, like a few chords that sound nice together that I find interesting anyway, like, you know, and then once my ear is sort of, you know, peaked about that, I'm like, okay, yeah. And then I'm like, maybe this sort of little melody, and I might sing over that. Oftentimes it's like listening to stuff again and again and again. Yeah. So even sometimes when I go on jogs, I might have a few little bits or just a few chords together, and that's it. And maybe just a little bit of, you know, rough production of drums or something that I might have put down, but I won't write any melodies or lyrics yet. But I'll run with it, I'll jog with it for ages and listen to it again and again and again until, like, a melody almost forces itself out of it.
Yeah.
And as opposed to sitting down on day one and going, I need to finish this song right now. But then again, sometimes, you know, especially in the early days, when I was writing, I'd write a song in an afternoon, and it was funny, I'm almost like jealous of my former self. I used to just, like, not overthink it, just be like, I'll write a song this morning, and even if the next day I didn't feel like the way I felt yesterday, I'd be like, that doesn't matter, that's the way I felt yesterday, it's fine.
So sometimes that's the worst thing about experience, you overanalyze, and you 100%. Think you have to break everything down, rather than maybe when you're younger, you just kind of, it flows.
Exactly, you just play.
That's why I think, and I think sport is a bit like that now. Mm-hmm. I'm looking back at some of our old rugby games during the pandemic when they're being shown on TV, and going, Jesus, they were brilliant games to watch. Sometimes now it's like robotic because we overanalyze everything, and maybe that comes with experience. So there's good and bad with experience, isn't there?
100%, 100%. And I, as I say, I'd sort of look back with envy on my former self of being able to do that, like, and sort of just, as you say, writing a song in a day or playing off the cuff or whatever it is. And definitely there's a danger when you get, I found when I got into my early 30s, that it's like overthinking things. Can I say that? Is that cool to say that? You know, is that going to, people relate to that? You know,
what would people think of it? How will they judge you?
Exactly. And I think oftentimes a lot of people who write lyrics are trying to write lyrics that, you know, that almost don't, are so vague that they don't, they're non-committal, so that they can't be, you know, criticized, I suppose. But I need to remind myself that sometimes, you know what, put yourself out in the page there, even if you're saying something that puts yourself in a bad light, or, you know, talks about your own anxieties or your own worries or whatever. They're the ones that people actually relate more to, like, you know.
Talk to me a little bit about the album briefly, yeah. And we'll get on to the future plans in a minute.
Of course, yeah. Well, like, yeah, it's coming out the 31st July. I'm so proud of it. We wanted to get it out. Initially,
Is it your sixth album?
I hard to believe. But sixth album, and yeah, it came together all through last year. We started off, we recorded a little bit in LA with a great producer called Rob Kerwin, who works with...
Jesus, it's a tough life, isn't it?
I know, yeah. That's it. And then we did a bit in London and a bit in Dublin. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's sort of, I've enjoyed the process of recording more as I've gotten older as well. And I think we've gotten a bit better at it. We know what our strengths are. And the main thing is we had songs that I'm really excited about. And I co-wrote a lot of this album with different people. Obviously Gabrielle for that song, and Keane from True Tides, and Ryan and Jimmy from Picture This, I co-wrote a song with. My sister Roisin, who co-writes with me with her band, mate John Bro from their band Thanks Brother. So it was a big collaboration. We worked with a few different producers as well. We had Lara Kay from All Twins playing some guitar. You know, it was a big sort of family of friends and musicians all collaborating together. So it was a lot of fun to make. But yeah, it's coming out the end of July. Initially, we were looking at postponing it until gigs were going to come back. But like, there's no end in sight for that stuff. So we don't know when the mass gatherings will be allowed. So really, you know, there's a lot of engagement on our social media and a lot of people listening to music and stuff. And we said, let's just get it out. It's a piece of work that we finished last year. Let's put it out there, and whenever the gigs come back, we'll promote it. Like, and in the meantime, we can start doing a little bit of writing for the seventh album, which will be whenever that happens next year, I suppose, or the end of next year. But yeah, I'm really proud of it, and looking forward to getting it out at the end of July.
Brilliant. Do you think with the social distancing and the crowds and all that, we've seen it in sport as well, it's going to be difficult for concerts. Do you think anything will change? I heard you mention the possibility of drive-in concerts and stuff like that. Is that something you'd get stuck into if there was 1,000 people in a field somewhere and you're playing?
Yeah, listen, we've been on our sort of, which has become like our almost daily Zoom meetings now in the band. It's an evolving thing. We're sort of taking it week by week and seeing what happens. Definitely when the album comes out at the end of July, we're going to want a way to promote it. So that's more the way we were investigating the drive-in gigs, was using it as an almost of a launch as the album, and maybe inviting people down, like, and press people and stuff, and having it as an angle for promo, as opposed to putting a big, you know, ticket in a load of cars to see us on a drive-in.
We'll bring you to Semple Stadium, the home of hurling. I was at the old Fela concerts many moons ago. They were incredible. So maybe we'll bring it to Thurles.
Well, do you know what? Last summer we played at Musgrave Park. Independent Park is our biggest ever show. Yeah. Like, and to play in that stadium, that was our first ever stadium show. Like, and it was amazing. Like, you know, and that was one of our biggest ever gigs. You know, 12,000 people squashed in there in Musgrave. It was
brilliant.
Amazing. Or Independent Park, as it's now known. But yeah, it was amazing. So definitely, I think poor Gavin is getting it. I think there's been a mixed reaction to Gavin James's really announcing those
gigs.
I think it's a brilliant idea what he's doing, and fair play to him. And, you know, that's the thing. People have to, the industry has to move forward and adapt and do what they can. And even if it's a short-term solution, I can't understand why anyone criticize him at all for trying. You know, he's obviously going to do everything safe, you know. But as I say, we're looking at possibly doing different gigs just to coincide with the launch of the album, as opposed to going back too soon trying to make ticketed events. I think it might be just a bit early for that, because again, you just don't know how it's going to develop, and we don't know if there's going to be a second wave or if the numbers will continue to drop, in which case things might come back quicker. Like, so we're waiting, seeing. We're hoping to do some shows in Dublin in December, but who knows, you know. That's sort of our plan for gigging, you know.
You have an opening in the band now, so any chance I can have an audition? Yeah, I can play the guitar. I can't sing, though. I can play the guitar, yeah.
Yeah, well, I've been getting away with it for years. I can't sing either, but I can't play guitar. But no, you'll be fine. Absolutely.
I want that adrenaline rush again, Danny. Just one more time, please. Can I jump on stage with you?
We had a session. Never mind the. I remember we had a session in Dubai a few years ago, and David Wallace sang a Little Respect, and it blew the roof off the place. I was like, I'm not following that, like, you know. So yeah, I mean, and a few rugby players have surprised me as well in the past. So you could be selling yourself short there. Maybe you're no, but of course the Hermitage Green lads are flying, and they're obviously, they've got their rugby background, but a great band as well, great musicians. We were only in Dubai with them there in February, but great lads as well. But yeah, so I don't know, who knows? Don't give up on it yet, Quinny.
I won't. Danny, I always think when I'm having these chats, particularly in this time, everybody's been affected, and I think lots of people are struggling and under pressure. What advice would you give to people out there who are maybe, I'm not saying you're this expert guru that has to tell everyone how to live and stuff, but just in general, how do you view the world now, and how do you think people are dealing with this in Ireland, and what can they do to try and be positive in themselves and try and create opportunities that, on a different level, you've got to try and create a different opportunities for yourselves?
Well, I think for me, as I said, I think it's important people aren't too hard on themselves. I think you've got to remind yourself that whatever you need to do to get through it, as I say, if you just want to watch Netflix until things turn around, like, I don't think people should feel guilty for whichever way they're dealing with it. It's such a tough time for everyone. But I do think it's important to try and help each other out. I don't know about you, but I can sort of see a little bit less cynicism, I think, out there. This thing is such a leveler. It's brought everyone, I think there just seems to be a little bit more humanity, not even the whole, you know, applauding the frontline workers or anything like that. I'm just in general, there just seems to be more people waving to each other when you're out walking, and, you know, I'm trying to be optimistic that out the other side of this, it might be good for us as a country, I suppose. And you know, we can be proud ourselves with how we dealt with it. I think, you know, so far we've been doing well, touch wood, and we can keep it going. But I think from a personal perspective, I think everyone's different. You've got to do what's right for you. You got to talk to your supports, whatever it is. Reach out to people if you're struggling. Use music, use sport, old sports, podcasts, whatever it is to get you through it, you know. And I think it's important just people try and be self-aware and just remember that, you know, there is people out there who are in the same boat as you, and everyone is struggling. And as I say, it's such a leveler. So whatever you can do to you know, reach out to your supports is the most important thing.
I always say, if you can create a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, no matter what your situation is, some people are much better off than others. Some people are struggling more than others. But just to finish, your grandmother passed away as well. So that was a tough time for you. Just briefly, just tell us about that. And you were affected by that.
It was just before the lockdown happened. So we had been playing. We were over in Dubai at the start of March. And we came back, and I think it was the day before St. Paddy's Day she passed. The funeral was definitely on the 19th of March. And it was really weird because it was just before lockdown, but all the measurements or all the sort of restrictions had started to come in. And, you know, we it was only like 30 people at the funeral. We all had to sit separately. And it was strange. It was strange not being able to give my dad a hug and my uncles a hug. And you know, there was, and it was strange for them. Like, it's the little things that made it strange. Like, they were, after the funeral, everyone just went home. There was no going to a hotel and having a bit of lunch and maybe even a couple of pints, or like you would after a funeral. And it was little things like that that I think made it difficult for my father, I suppose. And he even said it to me a couple of weeks later at Easter. He was like, you know, Easter Sunday was usually when we would all hang out together in his mom's house. And that was when it sort of dawned on him, because almost the pandemic and everything was a distraction. And in a way, because she hadn't been well, my granny was a great age, 96 years of age, and she passed from, you know, natural causes. But he was almost relieved that she passed before the coronavirus really got crazy, and you know, was in nursing homes and all that sort of stuff. And you know, she had been healthy. She wasn't suffering for a long time up until Christmas time. She was great. So yeah, it was very tough for my dad, I think, and for his brothers and sister. And so I just felt for him. And as I said, that's the weird thing, not being able to hang out with your parents, I think, is the thing that I'm probably missing, and family dinners and stuff that you sort of take for granted before, like, and
yeah,
you know. So as I say, hopefully now with the, if we keep staying the course, the restrictions will ease off, and soon enough we'll be able to see each other again and adapt, like, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough time for everyone. And then, as I say, when you show something else like that, like, you know, a granny passing away or something, some sort of family issue, it just makes it all a bit tougher, a bit weirder, you know. But, you know, thankfully, as I said, she had a great life and she was a great woman. And Maura O'Reilly, she'll be missed. She was involved in the label as well, and in my granddad's label, and my dad. And, you know, that was the thing. Like, I imagined hundreds and hundreds of people being at her funeral. You know, and because everyone who met her loved her, like, and she was so lovely. And as I say, in the industry and everything, there would have been people from all walks of life there. So, you know, there was only 20 or 30 people there, but she got a nice send off. And when it all finishes, we're going to have a celebration, you know, whenever that we can, to celebrate her life and have a few drinks, and, you know.
That's really nice, because that's been a difficult situation for you. Mm-hmm. Danny, thank you so much. It was lovely to chat to you. We could have chatted about so much more, and I just really enjoyed it. You've been very given of your time, so I really appreciate that. Good luck with the new album, and good luck for the future. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Alan. Appreciate it, bud.
Alan Quinlan's How's the Head on OTB. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.